What's going on, podcast listeners? Neil here for another episode of the Freedom Formula. I'm pretty pumped for this episode because I got my boy John Stentrom on. What's going on, John?
Hey, doing well. How about yourself?
Doing well. And for everyone listening, this is it's a funny connection because John was actually my RA in college at UCSD. So he was like the one older who's supposed to regulate the dorm rooms. So that's how long I've known John. It's been a minute, man.
I did probably a terrible job regulating anything during that time. Being a residential advisor was probably not my strong suit. I let
John, you guys do whatever. Like, you were the cool RA where you're just like, well, just do whatever you want. Just don't let me see it. And I'm going to be drunk on the weekend too. So it's okay. Let's just pretend we don't see each other. It's cool. So it was awesome.
Oh, you're bringing out the skeletons, man.
Awesome. Well, I wanted to bring on John because I feel like I've seen all the stuff you've been posting over the years, and I feel like you just have such a unique lifestyle and approach to what you're doing. And it's so funny because, like, I'll say this to you, and you probably had no idea I even thought that, but I've seen what you've been doing with, like, spearfishing and going to different startups and things like that, and I've always thought it was really freaking cool. So this is a great chance for me to be like, John, we haven't caught up in 10 years. Tell me what you've been doing, and also tell everyone all the cool shit you're posting on. So John, would you mind starting off with, like, what are you working on right now? And then we'll dive into your backstory as well, which I think is really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. My path has been all over the place. So right now I'm a product director for a SaaS company that's transitioning into AI. It's one of my buddies who started it. So I started that about 5 months ago. It's been nice to get back into the startup grind. Back after college, that's when we hung out at UC San Diego. You know, I did the engineering thing for a while. That was my background, was like product development, mechanical engineering. I started a startup with a friend. We got some investor funding, went into an incubator. So pretty much left my entire life in San Diego overnight and went to San Francisco. We raised a little bit of money. It was early AI stuff starting in like 2013. Originally, we were trying to develop algorithms for figuring out where like nanoparticles go for drugs in your body, where it accumulates, where it's like very complex math. Taught me a lot. It was very challenging. We spent years on that. We pivoted into like skin and we just tried to figure out like product market fit. But at the time, is before like all this AI stuff's happening right now, taught me that market timing is like the most important factor in a startup. Like you could have really sound technology, you can have money, but at the same time too, if you don't time the market right, it's very challenging to get people to adopt it, especially in the space that we are in, pretty disruptive. So I kind of was like, I want to do AI stuff, but I was also a little bit burnt out. And at the same time too, I realized I didn't understand marketing well. Like I understood technology, but not marketing. It was just something that was so foreign to me as an engineer. So I started a little blog, after I went, got my scuba certification with my wife. I was like, oh, like the guy who was like instructing it told me, hey, like you're too cool to scuba. You should really try this other thing. And he showed me this picture of this giant white sea bass, which is like a 70-pound fish. And he's like, just in your backyard right here, you can hold your breath and go shoot one of these things. And I was like, sign me up. That is like exactly the kind of thing that I need, is like total 180 from tech. I want to just go become an adventurer. So I spent like 5 years learning how to spearfish, traveling the world, created a blog. Then that turned into a TikTok channel, YouTube channel. Like it was making quite a bit of money. So I kind of was staying at home and just, it was before I had kids. So yeah, I was doing that whole life and I've hit almost all my goals of shooting these big fish, risking my life, doing some crazy stuff. Then I had a kid. So 2 years ago, I had a child and kind of changed everything in terms of like my risk tolerance. Now I don't feel as like I should go risk myself, my life as much. So that's why I think and then the AI stuff has been going bonkers. So it was like a nice like transition. I still have it. Like I still will post from time to time, but I want to get back into tech. So that's my whole story in a nutshell.
It's so funny because I'll hear the tech stuff and whatever, but then I hear you do spearfishing and kind of something which is more unique. And for me, that's freaking exciting. Number one, because it's such a unique way of making money, of actually diving into your passions and doing stuff. I'm curious on your end, like when you explain it very quickly like this, it sounds like, oh, I did tech and then moved to spearfishing, I moved to something else. It seems so fluid. Many times when people are making career pivots like this and deciding to give up on something which is working, it's a big decision. It's really freaking hard, especially when people are making transitions from like a 9-to-5 to entrepreneurship, or should I shut down the startup and go do spearfishing, or should I stop doing spearfishing and go do something completely different? Can you walk me through your mentality of when you're making these pivots? Like, is it as fluid as you're saying, or what is going on in your mind when you're making these changes?
I would say any project that you care about is like a marriage. So it's never fluid and never easy to switch. I've probably held on to projects way too long when the data was showing that it wasn't going to, you know, get me to escape velocity or something. And I've like clawed and tried to hold on as much as possible. I mean, you hear the adages of like, you know, the longer you stay with something, the higher it has a chance to compound. And, you know, it's like, it's really, if you have to put in that time to see the fruits of it. So no, none of this has been easy. I think your gut kind of tells you when it's time to move on to the next thing. Like if you're not waking up passionate about it anymore, it's really becomes like you're like a slave to the project and you're not enjoying it, I think is really a big telltale sign to probably switch. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one's a hard one, man. There's zero right or wrong on there. I mean, I have left corporate. Like I've left corporate. That was a very hard challenge back in the day, like just to mentally psych myself to quit a job at the time, like back in my 20s was very challenging. And I know people who are in their 30s and 40s who've never been able to do that, you know? So a lot of it comes down to being okay with not giving a shit what other people say or think about you, which is very challenging, but you have to unlearn a lot of stuff. Like I've pretty much had to unlearn how I was brought up. Cause I remember, and I still deal with this all the time. Like my mom, you know, she was always like, never ask for money. Like, don't get into debt with anybody. And there's a lot of things like as an entrepreneur, like you need to be able to ask for things. You need to be able to like, for depending on the certain type of business, ask for money, like all that stuff. Like I had to unlearn. Like, so I don't know. It you peel back the onion, it gets complicated all the way down.
Yeah, I feel like there's not a direct answer for any given person because like you said, there's so many learnings that people get from childhood or whatever, and you have to unlearn it, but not everyone has the same learnings. Like some people have zero of the limiting beliefs I had, right? And so they'll dive into something and say, I could pivot here, I could pivot here. For me, I'm the same as you, John, where I probably hold on to stuff a little bit too long. It could be like a fear of failing or like, you know, whatever it is. But I think that's oftentimes the hardest part is your identity gets wrapped in whatever you're doing. And then, like, you know, I did the whole digital nomad thing for a few years. I don't really talk about it much, but it was really hard to stop doing that because I was always known as the traveler guy. Like, I traveled for years, and all of a sudden, COVID came up. I wasn't traveling as much. At the time, I had a girlfriend who was an international girlfriend, and, you know, I was like, hey, that's what I do. I travel different places. I move around. And then all of a sudden, it started to not feel right anymore. But when that happens, it was like, well, if it doesn't feel right, but that's who I am, like, what do I actually do, right? And it's a really tough identity hurdle to grapple, is kind of what I found on my own.
I like that. I think a lot of people should not be tied to their identity as much as they are, like you're saying. And I don't know, I've had some, you know, we'll say hypothetical mind-altering experiences before where you start to learn that your identity isn't really what you are. And, you know, I've, like, those are the experiences that have really taught me the most where, you know, you got to let go. Like, you can switch. You just need permission sometimes from yourself that you can switch.
John, talk to me a little bit more about running a daddy daycare. I mean, you left startup world, you had a kid and you said, hey, I'm going to stop what I'm doing right now and focus on my child for like 17 months, I think. Walk me through that. Like how the mental decision to do that, like, yeah, how did that whole thing go down?
It all starts back when I was an engineer. Like it was the first time that I like dipped my toe in entrepreneurship, and it's like a weird tangential story, but I basically bought Kendrick Lamar's website, like a fan site, back before he was like the rapper he is today. And I grew that to where it was making more than I had as my engineer.
This is like right after UCSD, right? I think. It's I vaguely weird. Remember this. Yeah.
Exactly. So I basically, you know, back then learned negotiation with like the company that I was with to be able to do a reverse week. So I worked 2 10-hour days, Monday, Tuesday, and then I was off the rest, but I had like half my salary and full benefits, but I was making, you know, a good amount of money on this website. So like I gave myself like a mini retirement for a year. You know, I was on the beach in Mission Beach, San Diego. I was surfing every day. And I was like, this is an interesting way to view the world, is like, if you can figure out ways to structure your life so that you can have these like little mini retirements at different ages. I'm not waiting till I'm retired as like a 65-year-old and I can't go move or use my body the way I want to. So I always had that in the back of my mind of like, oh, I can do that. So that's a very unique like permission for myself to go like think outside the box. So when my kid was born, you know, California is pretty nice. You have the wife has a pretty good maternity leave. I was running the spearfishing thing, so I was at home anyways. And then after, when she went back to work, you know, it's not cheap to send your kid to like daycare. And I really didn't want him to go like straight into it. So I was like, you know, I'll probably stay at home and try this. And I'll tell you, it's the hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life. I don't think enough men understand how hard it is to stay at home and raise a child. Like, I think a lot of it societal is put on the wife. But I learned so much. Like, I learned that kids are monkey see, monkey do. And the habits and the daily routines that you do every day, they're soaking it up like a sponge. So I basically was like, how do I just train this child to have all the habits that I wish I had in myself instilled early? So I put a pull-up bar in the door frame, and every day we would like, I would assist him to do pull-ups. Now every time he walks by it, he does a couple pull-ups per day. And he's like, only two, you know, it's like he like all the little things. Like, I have a gym inside my office so that he sees me working out on a daily basis. So that's just, I don't want him to ever think that working out is something that you don't always do, right? It's like that just health is one of the foundational pillars. Like, everybody talks about it, but not a lot of people have it ingrained in them. So reading books, like every day I would be at home, I would just be reading books around the house. And then all of a sudden I would see him like pulling books and just start reading next to me, right? So I bought a Duder, which is like this backpack, and we would go on hikes every day. like random stuff. I was like, this is kind of like retirement. And sure, my business suffered, but at the same time too, it's like, he's noticeably different than most children right now. Like, he, like, and I'll always be biased because he's my son, but it's like, these are habits that he's started from 6 months old. So
it's cool.
Yeah. I don't know. I think more guys some dads should do it if you have the luxury, but you have to kind of structure your life in a weird way. So people look at you weird, like the societal things of people thinking that you're like some deadbeat staying at home as a provider is kind of funny. I was like, I'm making quite a bit of money staying at home and yada yada, but people still look at you as like, oh, you're a stay at home dad. What's wrong with you?
Yeah. So John, how'd you structure that? Cause in my opinion, that's one idea of freedom, right? And that's kind of like what this podcast is about, is how do you actually layer on the types of freedom that you actually care about? And for everyone, it's a little bit different. And I think at different phases of life, it's probably pretty different. For me, right now, having to travel, that kind of stuff. But same like you, when I have a kid, like, I don't want to be doing motorcycle trips in Africa anymore, right? It's just like, that's going to stop. I'm assuming I don't want that level of risk anymore. So how did you build it where you could even afford that? You know, were you making money on the side from other things where you're like, let me take 2 years just to hang out with my kid? How did you structure this?
Yeah, it comes down to like, my wife was still making her money, you know, like for her job, she's an occupational therapist. So we had that income stream of one parent. My company was bringing in multiple income streams, you know, whether it was Amazon FBA, like the, so I was selling products on Amazon. I had ad affiliate money, you know, from SEO work, brand deals. So it's like, you have all these different income streams for like a content business. You know, most content people, they rely on like one, which are like AdSense or, you know, YouTube partnership. You know, I thankfully have my cousin Kevin, who is, you know, the god tier of all things YouTube and running a business. He's Kevin from Epic Gardening. So I've had his brain, you know, tell me things. So that's the huge competitive advantage compared to most people. It's like, you know, I have that one person who, you know, we both love each other unconditionally kind of thing. So he's always in our back pocket so we can help each other as we go through different life stages. But, you know, he was the one who kind of got me into entrepreneurship in the beginning, you know, so I've kind of watched his playbook from the days where we were in the garage in San Diego, where he was starting Exponics, which was before Epic Gardening, the precursor. So it's like, you know, you just, when you get that kind of like, see how the sausage is made, it's a huge advantage. So I kind of just structured my company, that one, after what he was doing. You know, I kind of saw his playbook, diversified as much as possible. I made a lot of mistakes. And I think that's why it's not where, like, I was on track to, I had a couple of $30,000 months, you know? So it's like, you just, you know, the profit margin was ridiculous on that. So you kind of just keep
what was that
a nest egg, you know, that was the spearfishing.
Like, that was, okay. That was pure making content, a decent, and online content, yeah, for spearfishing.
Content and products on, ways. Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. So that was the company that I was doing. So I was able to run that at home. The thing that got a little hard was I went too wide too fast without having the right systems in place. That was the problem with that company. Like, I should have focused, I should have done the Hormozi model, which was like focus on one distribution channel, one product, and get it to $1 million in rev. So I learned that lesson the hard way. It's like, you know, I was almost 300,000 followers on TikTok, but then I was like not posting consistently because I was trying to like do a podcast. Then I was trying to do like YouTube videos, and then I was trying to do this and that. And the hard part about spearfishing was like, you have to go out into the world, like get, like all these things have to come together. You have to get that content. Yeah. I'm not in a location where it's like Bali, where you have super clear water, or Hawaii. I have really crappy conditions where like GoPro footage doesn't come out well. A lot of things, like, like mentally, I gave myself so many excuses to like not go get the content. So yeah, looking back at it, man, it's like, I wouldn't have been able to do it without an online business.
Yeah.
I think you can kind of do it with a remote, but it's hard if you have to be, if you're not your own boss, because I could set my kind of hours and stuff.
And John, did you mentally make the decision like, hey, I know my business is going to suffer because I'm going to be a stay-at-home dad right now? Or did it just happen organically? In hindsight, you're like, oh yeah, my business did suffer, but I thought I could do both.
I thought I can do both. And then I had some issues with like my website got hit with some helpful content update on SEO front, and that kind of discouraged me. But instead of being like resilient, I should have like doubled down on like FBA, and I didn't, because I was thinking I can put in all this effort on SEO to like bring that back up, but it was like throwing good money after bad. And so then you kind of see like, oh, if I'm watching the kid plus have to make these like really hard decisions, and I like don't have the team that, you know, I had some outsourced VA work and like had systems in that place, but it wasn't like, I need to get in the trenches right now. And it's like, oh, I can't, because like after a whole day of watching the kid while the wife's at work, you know, mentally I wasn't able to like kind of turn that gear. And it was fine for a few months. I think I did pretty well for like 4 months. And then I was like, holy cow, because the kid was like crying and I wasn't getting good sleep. And that taught me like how pivotal health was. Like, sleep is the most important thing, then followed by nutrition and then working out. So, you know, you start kind of like seeing, like taking a step back. I love that I did it. You know, I saw somebody on Twitter the other day, they're like, man, if I can do it all over again, I would have like created a company in my 20s and exited it and have my 5-6 years as a stay-at-home dad, and then I'll go start another company afterwards. And I'm like, it's impossible. You can never time that kind of crap. Like, that's baloney. I wish I was a trust fund baby at the same time, you know? It's like, it doesn't matter. So I think I knew deep down that it was probably going to put a big hit on my finances in the future, but I was like, you can't get this time back. I read like the Die with Zero book, and it was like, how do you get those experiential dividends? And that's by, you know, like having this, like, this is something that nobody can really take away from me, is like that time that I had with my kid at the, what I think is like the early years that nobody talks about, which is like really foundational, like the core, like I think somebody said like your subconscious is like formed before you get to be like 6 years old or something. I was like, I purposely was like, I want to get in there in the game, nitty gritty early. And you know, so just random things. I don't think most of the people think this way. Like,
I think it's a little weird. Obviously, like, I'm biased because I think the same way of you, where like there's enough time to make money, right? And I do, it's always conflicting. And I was just thinking about this the other day, how sometimes things need to calm down. So you're like, okay, I got to start a business now, and it's going to pay dividends 5-6 years from now. So it takes time to compound. But then that kind of conflicts with let me take time off to like experience life, right? And like, how do you really marry the two? And like, I don't really know the answer is the truth, but I do feel like the prioritization of experiences, the whole purpose of why you're doing stuff. I know people who launch businesses and they're super successful quickly. Some people take a long time for it to compound. I guess my point being is like, I would prefer doing what you do, right? Which is you have enough time to make money. You have experience now. Like, you'll be able to make money at some point, but you can't get that time back as a kid. People just forget that, right? And it might be like an ego thing. It might just wanting to feel productive. Like, John, I don't have a kid yet. Hopefully in a couple of years, you know, maybe I will. And I've wondered, what am I going to do then? Like, am I cool with the company just, you know, sitting, like, dwelling? Like, I really don't know the answer for that. And I feel like it's kind of a hard decision to come to.
Yeah, I think everybody, it's personal. I mean, I can like mirror this back to you. It's like, for a long time, I was traveling a lot, and that traveling is in my DNA. And I would see stuff like what you did, 7 years, like nomad. I'm like, that is something that I've always wanted to do. But like, as we get older, like priorities change. I don't necessarily feel like I want to do that per se, but there is like, I want to get myself in a financial situation where I can live abroad with my whole family for a year. Like, that's something that in the next year or two, we're planning, you know. And it's, you start running the numbers and it's like, wow, I can live, you know, 3 months in Vietnam, 3 months in Philippines, do some like South Italy, South Spain for a year, and it'd be cheaper than living in LA and give my family that kind of unique life experience, you know. And you know, if you travel before too, your kid's free to fly. Like, all these like little things, I'm like, you just got to get creative. But I don't think a lot of people, unless you have family or friends who've done it, or you follow the right circles on social media, and that, you know, that a lot of people don't think that they can do it themselves. So I don't know. I think everybody's unique. Surround yourself with good friends who do crazy shit, and you'll probably do more crazy shit, but you'll regret it. I think that's half the battle, right?
Yeah, exactly. John, what's the, like, what's your goal, at least career wise now? And I've mostly asked this because I speak with people who are clearly empire builders. Like, I want to build a $100 million company. I have no intention of doing that. If that happens kind of organically, that's cool. But you know, I just, you know, the amount of effort I've seen people have to put in to build that type of company is a lot, where I'd rather take my kid to Vietnam and Spain and do things like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not convinced they're mutually exclusive, but I guess my question back to you, John, is what is the goal career-wise, and how do you prioritize lifestyle versus career?
If I had to pick a number, you know, I think, and this might sound high or might sound low to some people, you know, it's like, I always think my ouch number originally when I was in college, it was like 5 million liquid cash. Like, now I think after inflation, all that stuff, it's probably 10. Like, it'd be nice to have some assets that are worth like 10 million. But at the end of the day, it's like, chasing a number is not the ideal thing. It comes down to like, live well within my means, have a nice safety buffer, but the time is the most important thing. So I would rather not ever have more than, you know, a few million dollars if it meant I could have my time, flexibility, freedom, you know, and keep things simple. I think simplicity isn't talked about. Like, you know, your life is a lot easier when things are simple. And I've been trying to realize that, like, less is more. And then I live within my means. Yeah, that one's a tough one. Or just knowing when is enough. Because I do have friends who it's always chasing more, more, more. Like, for a long time, I was like, I shook Elon's hand once and I was like, oh my God, I'm never going to wash this hand. I want to be just like him. And I made decisions that I probably, looking back at it, I was like, I don't wish I made that decision, you know, just because I was trying to emulate his dream, you know, thinking that I could be somewhat similar to him. And I think just knowing when's enough that you're happy with like the life that you're living. I hope I realize when that is and don't push myself too crazy. Yeah.
That's the hardest part, man. John, if people want to get to know you a little bit more, follow you, where can they find you and see what you're working on next?
Sure. If you guys like spearfishing, everything on all the social medias, it's Cast and Spear. But I'm going to focus mainly on Twitter now for my own personal. So just at John Stenstrom, just DMs are open. Say what's up.
There we go. And we'll post all of that in the show notes as well. John, great catching up with you, man.
Thanks, Neil. Appreciate it.